Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 266 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. This is over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
And that was very quick. Yes, I do. Now I'm
going to get on with it, buddy. Give us a rundown.
Slow this one down. This isn't the blow episode. This is the lewds episode.
We're doing this episode. This is an hour packed into 30 minutes.
How lewd of you.
Let's go.
All right. Today we got the Hot Tub Time Machine, Duff, and McFarlane USA. We have three movies on the box office Ace prediction game. We got a little trivia coming at you. We have a little Matthew McConaughey, Richard Linklater trivia since the Boyhood's getting all this Oscar talk. And we'll be talking Boyhood, Birdman, Girl Most Likely, Fury, Walk Among the Tombstone, and What If in our movie review section. Trailers today, we got Guillermo del Toro's latest. We have a few documentaries and Van Damme's latest as well. News items regarding Alien, the rebooting that franchise, or continuing that franchise, I should say. And the latest on Will Smith's depression. Yes, even the golden one gets depressed sometimes. Can you believe that? I thought Will Smith only shit rainbows, but apparently he gets down once in a while. Anyways, let's get on with the box office ace.
Not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
All right, let's play. Let's play. Because 50 Shades of Grey made $1.5 billion.
Well, you hit it almost right on the head, right? Your prediction for the weekend, yeah, was spot on.
That was very good.
Well done, sir. I thought apparently more people were going to get in hand jobs in the theater, and I predicted 97. But did you hear about this? People fucking around in the theaters?
It's not surprising, I guess.
A friend of mine went and saw this locally and said that somebody...
And he fucked around
somebody,
the theater?
No. She said that somebody was getting a hand job next to her, which...
Was it her? Next to her, yeah. So no, that was her.
I said to her, well, first of all, I have questions. First, did he finish? And she said, I don't know. Yeah. I said, well,
was
second
there a little
of all,
extra
how long
topping
was this
on
going
the popcorn?
On for?
I mean, what?
Was there any leg contact?
The milk duds were a little stuck together afterwards? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, right. So people are fucking around in theaters, and it happened in New York as well, but that doesn't surprise me. This is kind of like when gangs were fighting in theaters when Boys in the Hood came out. So people are just reenacting what they see on screen.
Yeah, we're just stupid. We just do whatever we see.
Yeah, this is perfect for a drive-in, which we'll talk about later. Yeah, what'd you guess? What was your prediction, 85?
Mine was 80.5 million, which is the Twilight adjusted number. And it did 85, so I won on this movie. I did not win on Kingsman, though. Which I was sadly quite off, because Kingsman did it kind of phenomenally at 35 million, or 36 million, I should say, really.
Yeah, I was way lower than you, and so I got stymied there. But I've heard nothing but phenomenal reviews, great word of mouth coming off this. Everything from the soundtrack to just the level of fun and energy in this movie. Really surprising.
Yeah. You think will it break 100 million, though?
Absolutely. I think so.
You think this
holds up. I think this holds up very well this next weekend, because I've only heard it has decent midweek numbers, and I've only heard positive things. Plus, there's really no other action.
I was going to say it has no competition, right?
Yeah.
I mean, 50 Shades of Grey, even while it certainly didn't do, you know, what everyone thought it was going to do, it's going to easily take number one, right?
What other fun movie is in the marketplace? And I mean, fun is in like entertainment popcorn. Jupiter Ascending tried to be that and failed. Seventh Son tried that. But The Duff's a teen comedy.
Hot Tub Time Machine 2.
Well, yeah, these are things this week, but action entry and action. This to me is like XXX. That's what it reminded me of, even the Samuel L. Jackson connection. So, you know, hindsight's 20/20 because I guess low, but I can see now why I was mistaken in my ways, because I've heard nothing but positive things.
All right. Well, let's get into the three movies out now, which there's nothing positive being said about.
I want to see Hot Tub Time Machine 2, though. I think this looks very fun.
I want to see it, too, but I don't think anyone else gives a shit. I really didn't. I was a huge fan of the first one. It was okay.
I was.
I don't have
a
problem necessarily with it, but it's just not – you say it's good. It became like a minor cold hit, and I don't really understand it. It's not that good.
I know, but you know what the thing is? It surprises me that you don't like it more because you are a fan of those 80s John Cusack movies, and it's kind of like the Better Off Deads and the One Crazy Summer.
But it's not even about like
I know,
that's
but
like
it has
secondary
slight references
to, it,
to that,
know?
And it's kind of fun.
That's the problem I thought with it. This one at least looks like there's more jokes in this one. You know, there's less of a plot, more jokes. Well, maybe that'll work better.
This is the Wayne's World 2, right? The sillier, more outlandish entry that's
know.
Kind
Wayne's
of...
Wayne's World 2 is horrible, so let's hope this isn't Wayne's World 2 for their own sake. But, yeah. I mean, where are you going on this one?
I'm going to go 13 on this one.
Wow, so you went high. You know, I originally was going to go 12. I reset that to 10, and I wouldn't be surprised if this actually did less.
Yeah, and this could even open up in the 6 range. I mean, so this could be all over the place on this. But I do think the trailers, because that Red Band trailer and my affinity for these actors, sure. Not even so much the first one, but just for how much I like Craig Robertson. And
yeah, and the cast is great. You know, Clark Duke, Rob Corddry is great. Adam Scott, who – it's interesting. Why is Adam Scott not more – in the advertisements for this.
Yeah, he's not really featured in the trailers, and he's taking over the John Cusack spot in a sense, so it's kind of strange. Maybe because he hasn't headlined anything on his own, but I still say the best thing he ever did was Party Down on Stars. Did you ever see that show?
Did I ever see it? Of course.
But this is before we had a podcast.
Wonderful,
we were talking about this,
wonderful
yes.
show.
Great show. If you haven't seen that, I say that's a Netflix or Hulu or wherever you can find it. Gem, mm-hmm. Party Down. Watch
By
that.
By the creator of Veronica Mars.
Yes. However, I do think it does that. And moving on to the DUF, which stands for the Dumb Ugly Fat Friend.
Dick Under Fat Fuck. I don't
Dunder Mifflin. I don't know. This thing.
Dunder Mifflin would be great. No, yeah. Designated Ugly Fat Friend.
Yeah. I don't know. Predictions are all over the place for this. I feel nothing off.
People
this
are comparing this to Easy A, and I think that's
bold to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, Easy A had a better cast. Even this cast isn't bad. They're not that they're unknown. I mean, they got the older cast for the older people, if you will, and definitely this young cast is unknown. They're not unknown. I've heard people say that. I know who a lot of these people are, so if I know who they are, I guarantee you younger people actually really know who they are.
Yeah, but you watch a lot of CW, so...
Hey, don't knock TV now, all right? I know the slogan, so I do watch CW. But these people aren't on CW. Well, no, they're not.
No, I don't know. I would just
I don't know. Bella Thorne is like a Disney kid, I think. I don't know.
Where are you going on this thing? You going Easy A numbers? You going...
Hell no. I'm going to go 9.5.
I think that's even bold. I'm going 4. I think this does what Fun Size did a couple years ago, that movie with the little adorable Victoria Justice chick, which
wouldn't
thought,
necessarily be a bad comparison, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of what it reminded me of with the cast that you know had TV people in it and whatnot.
Well,
but,
I think this is a bit more in line with teens, though, especially if you look at Easy A. Like, this is a bit more in line with that, whereas Fun Size, I don't – movies like that just don't – they're hard to hit, you know.
Well, plus the marketing on this, maybe it's been centralized to the
marketing
demographic.
Is
I haven't seen a lot.
An issue on this. Yeah, it's not – there's not been a lot. But this is, of course, a CBS Films movie distributed by Lionsgate. So
– Oh, then I'm comfortable with my prediction. Expect? CBS Films is involved in this? I'm good. Anybody getting involved with CBS Films gets the lowest grossing movie of their career. So I'm good on that. I feel confident there.
That's why I think why the advertising's a bit of a problem.
So let's move on and talk about McFarlane USA, which is the Kevin Costner sports drama. I mean, Kevin Costner, who was absent from screens for a while, has been in like a movie a month for 2 years now. This is getting fucking crazy. This guy is, I mean, going back to like really Jack Ryan, he's been in 3 Days to Kill, this, Draft Day, Black and White. Now he's all over the place. All over the place. So anyways, McFarlane USA, sports drama, Disney. We've seen this done a billion times. Some of them are good. Some of them are really dull, like Glory Road and things like that. Even Million Dollar Arm was fairly dull, which a lot of people are predicting this against. But I've heard some people getting kind of aroused when the trailer comes on and knowing the story about this. And this could be one of those slow burns that doesn't do huge at the box office but has a solid opening weekend and couple of good multipliers. So I think this does around the 11 mark. Where are you going on this?
I'm going to say 8.5.
Okay. That's about where The Game Stands Tall did, which had a great multiplier.
Yeah, I don't think this does Million Dollar Arm numbers. I think, first of all, the big problem with this is that it's track, right?
It's, yeah, I know. It's the specialized
sport. It's a real – and I think that's a big issue here. That's going to hurt it because it's not a big sport, you know?
It's not thematically pleasing either in a lot of ways. You know, it's not baseball. Or
look, baseball movies, football movies have had problems. So you're going to tell me that, like, these dudes running track, like, this is going to be a movie that can match those? I don't know. I'm gonna say that's rough.
Okay. Well, those are our predictions for the weekend. This is going to be, I think, a weekend dominated, or it's pretty obvious, dominated by holdovers. So none of these are going to break the top spot, and some of these can outright crash and burn. So it's going to be another interesting year at this box office. Yeah, it's been a tough battle so far. But you've been doing well this year. I got to give you credit.
I've been doing horrible.
No, you've been doing good.
I've been doing good. Let's see the standings right now. I'm going to look at this right now.
All right. Doing good. You want a little on-air standings here?
Let's look at this. Okay. I'm in fifth place on Box Office Ace. I'm 145 million off. You're 136 million off. You're in third.
Hey, top
Joe's
three, baby.
In second with 113. We got a new champion right now, Sean Peach. He's at 111.
Well, ain't that peachy?
So we're going to hope that he can hold on to that, because if anyone can beat Joe, they become my hero immediately.
Well, I'm going to shave off a little off my score this weekend.
It's still close. It's all close. You know, everyone's in it. Anyone can win at this point. It's obviously, it's only, you know, month
8 weeks
two
into the year.
Yeah.
But, you know, actually, not that bad for being off 8 weeks into the year, only 145 million. We would still all be keeping our jobs as studio heads at this point. So join in the fun. Get your name listed in the standings on air, as you see. Trevor will do for you. And get into boxofficeace.com. No time is too late. Get over there and join up now. Let's move on and talk about the trivial trivia portion of today's show, which I know Trevor has been looking forward to, because his recall of movie titles is, bar none, the greatest of any movie man I've ever met. Are you ready for this one?
What?
It is.
I think you just made some shit up there.
I did. You like that? Call me P.T. Barnum. Ah, come see this.
Yeah, right?
All right, I got one for you. Did you already read this one, or are you coming in cold on this?
I'm cold.
Oh, I like it. Well, let me warm you up.
I didn't
ready?
Know we had this time.
We do. We got a little trivia for you.
God. What do you got?
All right. So last year's best actor winner was Matthew McConaughey, right?
Okay.
Sure. He said, okay. Yeah, I'm not going to sell you a car here, bud.
All right.
Roll with me. Work with me. And most people remember him for what? His early on-screen appearance in Dazed and Confused, right? Richard Linklater's film. And Linklater's up this year.
That's his catchphrase.
Right, exactly, yeah, which sure. Kind of became, which is strange because he has so little screen time in that movie. But there is another Oscar-winning actor in that movie who has a bit part. And this guy won a writing Oscar and
a writing Oscar.
Had made a best picture. He's a winner. You know, he didn't get a best director for it, but he's an actor primarily. Who else? What Oscar-winning?
And a director?
Yes. What Oscar-winning actor-director, although he got his Oscar for writing a screenplay and for making a best picture, is also in Dazed and Confused?
I don't know.
All right, well, we'll get back to this. Let's move along then.
We have to get back to it?
Yes, we'll come back to this after the news.
No.
Yeah, because I want to stump you. I want you to think about this. There's so many people in that movie.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't even think. I don't know.
All right.
They won a best right thing? I don't know.
Just think of the actors.
Was it for the same movie?
No.
So they won two Oscars for two different movies. Well, correct. They didn't win the best picture Oscar, I guess, obviously. Well, they might have. Were they producing the movie as well?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, shit.
I believe so. And it's not George Clooney, I'll tell you that. So I'll give you that little nugget right
there.
There's
a lot of people in that movie.
This is an early appearance, exactly. That's why. But it's crazy to me thinking about it, because McConaughey gets all this attention for that. And this actor is just as big, just as distinguished. And
I have no idea.
Nobody brings it up. And I was, you know, looking at some of the credits the other day, and I thought back, and I thought, you know, I don't want to wonder why he doesn't. And he's never worked with Linklater again, which is.
And he has a bit part, though, you say.
Just like McConaughey. He has the same size part as McConaughey.
As McConaughey? Ooh,
yeah.
God.
Different part of the film, but he is in Dazed and Confused. All right, people. So think about it out there, and we'll We'll get back to it. I think it's a pretty worthy one. So you hear about this thing?
Ah, there's a thing?
Yeah, this thing. I got to talk about this a little bit because you know that one of the only or last working drive-ins in California is about 10 minutes from my house. And I sent you this article the other day, and I think it's absolutely hilarious because it was on local news here, and it's now becoming kind of a national news story for whatever reason. But 50 Shades of Grey was playing at the drive-ins up here next to SpongeBob, and parents are quote-unquote outraged. Although if you see the kind of people that go to this place, they're not the kind of people that get outraged easily, so I think outrage is a strong fucking term for this. But they're worried because their kids are looking over and they're seeing Bush getting eaten while SpongeBob's up there getting, you know, squeezed. So, you know, isn't that the greatest thing about drive-ins, though?
You know, when I was a kid, yeah, that's what I remember. By the way, they did a similar thing down at the City of Industry drive-in, but they played it. They had SpongeBob and something else play, but they played it afterwards. They didn't play it at the same time, so there was like an announcement. My sister went and her husband went to it, and so there was a big announcement there. So they at least did it right down there. But yeah, as a kid, I certainly remember going to the drive-in, and the big thing about the drive-in was that you could go. It would be family night; you'd go with your family, but you could, you know, watch the latest and greatest horror movie that you weren't supposed to see.
I saw a lot of Nightmare on Elm Street with no sound.
Yeah,
me.
I know.
You know,
I remember like Chucky. Like that. I remember all kinds of stuff. Yeah, I saw all kinds of shit.
I got a story to tell. I don't know if I ever told you. Ever tell my Die Hard story at the drive-in?
No.
All right, so check out this story. So I'm a kid, 8, 9 years old, something like that. And I begged my mom to take me to see Die Hard because that's what 8, 9-year-olds did in the 80s. You saw rated R movies because people didn't know, you know. So for whatever reason, my mom takes me. And we're in the theater. And these two guys in front of us get into a fist fight. And my mom freaks the fuck out, grabs me, and flees the theater. Now, I'm fucking throwing a shit fit. I'll tell you, I remember exactly in the movie where this happened. It's near the end where the place is going, you know, shit's blowing up, and he's almost found his wife and the whole thing. So we almost seen it probably about a good 90 minutes of the movie.
Uh-huh.
So she drags me out of the theater. I'm, you know, crying my eyes out, this, that, and the other. It's not fair. Okay, well, we can go back and see it again. Well, the only place she waits a while, and the only place it's playing after that is the drive-ins up here in Union City, California, where it's not the greatest neighborhood, okay? So she takes me to see Die Hard at the drive-in. Now, the drive-in started probably 9 o'clock, 8, 9 o'clock. So she falls asleep. Now, I not only watch Die Hard, but I watch Coming to America afterwards at 9 years old with the royal penises clean and the whole thing.
What a great,
you know,
drive-in movie, too.
I mean, it's one of the seminal drive-in moments of my life, you know? So I've always had a love for the drive-in because it was the same thing. It was that, oh, my God, you got two movies and this is like something you shouldn't be seeing. But it felt so intimate, too, because it was right in the car and it was a great drive-in moment. And to see Die Hard in a drive-in, it was kind of it's a great idea. You know, it's a great Die Hard or drive-in movie, if you will. So that's
sure.
My
and Coming to America as well.
Absolutely, you know. I mean, really, it played better in the drive-ins, I'm sure, than in the theaters. But I got the love for the drive-in because of that always. But I've seen a lot of movies at this drive-in up here, and outside of comedies, a drive-in is not your spot to go. But I could see why some couples might want to see 50 Shades at the drive-in, if you know what I mean.
Privacy.
I mean, as a parent, do you not think about things like this? If you take your kid to see SpongeBob and they got two screens that are playing next to each other, and then wants to see the kids.
Well, I think you'd plan for it, right? Because as a parent, you'd be like, let your kids watch that, and then you'd turn and watch the other.
Damn right.
I don't know. Right. I'm not a parent, so.
Not that I know of.
I'm not a parent in many things, but I'm not a parent.
We own a dog. It's kind of similar.
I'd never let him watch 50 Shades of Grey. Never.
Good man. No pussy for him.
Mm-mm.
He doesn't like cats.
His balls are cut off.
Oh, goodness. Archer, I feel for you. Okay, let's talk about some good news. Yeah, let's talk about Neil Blomkamp.
Okay, good news?
Yeah, I think it's cool that this guy who does Chuppie.
Is this real?
Yes, this is real because he tweeted it or Twittered it or Instagrammed it.
Yeah, he said they were considering it. Are we? So is this real or is this?
Finally, this is officially like, my next movie was the tweet that I saw, which said that he is going to be taking on a new movie in the Alien universe that is going to follow Prometheus 2, get this, that Ridley Scott is working on eventually. Well, when the fuck is this movie coming out, and where's... Well,
we all know that movies in the Alien universe are the best movies ever made, right?
I mean, they're pretty damn good. Are we going best movie ever made? I mean, Jesus. I got one good one.
Like, I like Prometheus, but I don't know if I necessarily...
You welcome us. I don't want a sequel to that.
I don't know that I want any more Alien movies at all. Or Predator like movies for that sense. I I'm pretty good like on those.
I'd like to see what this guy has to do with that. This might be the cat to re-envision something like that. Too bad he didn't get his hands on the RoboCop reboot. Honestly.
Oh, please. Because his last movie was so amazing?
Nah. That last one.
All he's going to do is take... He does the same thing with every movie. And Chappie looks like the same thing as well. So I am interested to see him move away from the apartheid stuff. That'd be good, for one thing. Make a movie that doesn't relate to South Africa? Maybe?
Yeah, but that's kind of his whole shtick, you know?
And so how's he going to do this Alien movie? Is it going to be another movie like that? I think, you know, he said what he needs to say about that, really. Let's stop rehashing it.
Yeah, you're saying he's beating dead horse.
Let's do something else.
That's the problem with Elysium. It feels like a retread of a retelling. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's like a joke somebody told you 3 days down the line. It's just not that.
For sure. And Chappie looks as good as Chappie looks, which it does look really good. I'm a little scared that stuff's going to be in there. You know, it's going to ruin the movie.
All right. Well, let me play devil's advocate for a second. Let's say that they have to, or they're going to reboot Aliens or do something anyways with this franchise.
There's no reboot anything, right? Because they're not going to.
Whatever they're doing, it's just aliens, whatever this right? installment okay. is, okay, that sure. it's coming anyways, wouldn't it be at least ideal if this guy's behind the helm of it? Somebody that likes sci-fi and at least does it somewhat intelligently, as opposed to some fucking hack that's just going to get them, you know, like a Paul Anderson, Alien versus Predator, just, you know, like your point and shoot.
Well, I nothing. Like Requiem.
I like Requiem too, to be fair. But I meant like the first one, you know, or something like that along those
yeah,
lines. Or,
I don't know. Does it? I'm not if he's going to ruin it.
I mean,
right. Really. I mean, let's look at RoboCop, because that was a movie made with the best intentions, right? Someone who thought they had something good to say about modern warfare and the world we live in and where it's going.
I know that's a troubled movie. I tried to watch that again. That's the same thing here. That last RoboCop movie that they did broke down at the script level, because there are some nice things about it, but they did it a little too much. You know, there were some problems there. So that's what I hope they don't do anymore with this, because. I mean, we got to start a new
slickness.
Segment.
We need to get rid of the slickness and get back to human beings telling a human story. You know, that's really where we need to be. Not this slickness thing that they've started. The only way they think they can compete is by spending a shitload of money, special effects, all this stuff. And it's not a joke. It's fucking real. Just look at movies nowadays and look at something 10 years ago. Look at when this whole... of what we have this revolution started late 70s and throughout the 80s. And look at those movies as compared to today's movies. You know, I was thinking about this. We're going to do a little retrospective on Lethal Weapon here. Just look at the Lethal Weapon movies. Just look at that series. And that's where we came from and where we're at and where we're going. You know, look at 1 and look at 4.
Yeah.
You tell me which is the superior movie. You tell me what's wrong with number 4, which I think everyone across the board will agree is a pretty shitty movie.
I actually prefer 4 over 3, to be honest with you. But
possibly
I
that's
agree.
Fine. I mean, but you're right. That was back in the day when by the time you got to the third movie, they just gave up anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that, but you get what I'm saying anyway. Yeah, I think that's a good franchise to look at for what's happened over the course of the past, you know, 30 years.
Yeah, we will be doing a Lethal Weapon kind of retrospective. We're going to start looking at some movies that are, you know, inspirations to us as filmgoers, as kids growing up, all that kind of stuff, and talk about that specifically on a special episode coming up soon. So I look forward to talking to you about that in depth. Let's move on and talk a little bit about our boy Will Smith, or I love Will
Willie,
Smith.
Willie, the Fresh Prince.
Yeah, you know, what's he's got some to? Music coming out, too. He's apparently working on an album by Kanye West, which is...
Big Willie style?
Yeah, I love Big Willie style, and I don't mean that in the homoerotic way. I mean that in that album, because that is my shit. I get jiggy with it, all right? So, and I will to this day. Anyways, let's talk about his new movie coming out, Focus, which I think... is playing a little strange with trailers. Have you been watching this TV spots for this? Because all of a sudden,
sound looks just like the trailer from what I've seen.
I've seen some ones that are cut almost like a comedy, and I didn't realize that this was directed by the team that made Crazy Stupid Love.
What I got out of it from the other trailer though was that it was a comedy.
I got like a dark comedy out of it, or like a black or maybe a drama comedic moment.
Sure, I agree. When we talk about Crazy Stupid Love, that's what that is as well. You know,
I've never seen it still.
Such a good movie. You should watch it.
That's what everyone says. You know that Emma Stone and Gosling were originally the choices for the roles that went to Smith and Margaret Robinson. So it's interesting that they wrote that for them, and this is how it comes out in the end. But I do think that this looks like a good movie for Smith to come back in. He also signed on to do an action thriller named Bounty. So he's getting back in the action hero role. But this is after he failed with After Earth. And he said that he hit a depression after that, which is somewhat surprising to me.
Do you not understand? I mean, After Earth, okay, that's fine. After Earth was a failure. It's not like the worst movie. It's not that bad. Like, you could at least stand up for it. It's not like some horrible failure. That's what I didn't understand about that.
Yeah, I think there's moments in it that work. And I kind of like After Earth in a weird guilty pleasure kind of way.
God, this movie's the worst thing ever. It has its moments where you're like, good God, that's bad. But then it's not that it's not entertaining. It's okay. It's you know, it's fine. I don't know that I'd go into a depression over it.
What I think he was kind of beating around the bush and saying, because the interviewer that he said this to, an Esquire, brought up Wild Wild West, and he said, well, that still made, you know, money. And it's true that it made, you know, unadjusted $200 million.
That movie is possibly worse than After Earth. So.
Absolutely. I would say, yeah, it's a comedic dead zone. It's flat. Although I've seen it more times than it deserves to be seen somehow. Because I like Will Smith, and it plays a lot on TV. But regardless, he was saying he felt bad because he brought his kid into it, and his kid took a lot of criticism. But then again, I wanted to say it wasn't really a Will Smith movie. It was your kid's movie, because from what I remember, you were pretty much a co-star in that
movie.
But
it didn't hurt anybody. And it certainly didn't hurt his kid's career. It didn't hurt his career. It didn't.
He was saying
it
also didn't open up in the number one spot, and that he had to tell himself it was okay that he wasn't number one and whatnot. So it's just interesting.
It is someone
who's
used to that though.
I'm sure it's the same type of thing that happens to Cruz and some of these other guys. They just not as verbal about it. I think to be at that level of superstardom, you have to almost have that drive to hope or to push and bank that they're all going to open up at number one. And if not, you slip into that Nicolas Cage realm, you know, where it's a slippery slope there.
You got to sell your castle and your private island.
Right. And you got to start making movies like Outcast. Very strange. Oh, I want to bring up a little bit of a little news here off the cuff that I want to talk about. Somebody, a friend of mine, sent me this tweet today, or a picture of a tweet that Martin Lawrence sent out, and it was a picture of the cover page of a Thin Line Between Love and Hate Part 2 that he co-wrote with a scriptwriter, and said he just finished work and he can't wait to get the original cast back.
The original cast?
Well, I guess people that were in it initially. Can't even think of her name anymore. Lynn Whitmore. I can't remember what her name was, but God, that cast wasn't very distinguished to begin with. But do you think that's a movie that beckons for a sequel?
No, not at all.
21 years later.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, is that a case, you think, of a comedian being so out of work and labeled toxic or unhirable because of his attitude for so long that he has to write his own material now to get any fucking work, and he has to do sequels? I mean, because really, I thought Big Mama's 3 was his last gasp of trying anything.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone wants to work with him.
Well, he's just not, he has no monetary value, you know, so there's no point in working with him, right? Even if he didn't want to, he'd be like, well, maybe I would anyways.
Yeah. What's interesting, because he was going to be the next Eddie Murphy, you know, before Chris Rock was the next Eddie Murphy, before Kevin Hart's now the next Eddie Murphy. And it's just none of these guys.
Everyone's
really,
the next Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. I mean, none of them have really catapulted. And really, Kevin Hart's had arguably the closest thing to success. Well, although Martin Lawrence had
still
some nice ones in there too, with the Big Mama's franchise and Blue Streak. He had
enough,
a moment where he was making some money.
You got to think about Kevin Smart still. Kevin Hart. You think he's blowing up at this point, but he really hasn't yet, and he's still primed to go off even bigger.
That's true. Although he's appeared in a lot of movies lately. Although I did think The Wedding Ringer was the best one he's appeared in so far. And he
that's
has.
It's okay, because it doesn't hurt him to do anything now, because he's not. He's big. He's not huge. He still could be bigger.
But Martin Lawrence, if you go back and listen to the DVD commentaries on something like What's the Worst That Could Happen? I mean, they're all but ripping him a new asshole in that movie. They were saying, apparently the crew had T-shirts that had the title of the movie was What's the Worst That Could Happen? And on the back it said a sequel. I mean, that's pretty bad when your crew is walking around with that. Just total dipshit. So,
well, when you're mean, you know, I guess that just makes people not want to work with you. And especially if you're mean and you're have no monetary value, right?
Right. Yeah.
I want to work with you. I mean, one of the things about you brought up Tom Cruise, as much as people like to talk shit about him, including us, because he's, you know, slightly out of his fucking mind, he's apparently one of the nicest guys in the world. And everyone will tell you that when they meet him, no matter if they've been one of the guys who've been like, Tom Cruise is crazy, he wins them over.
So
that's a dude that people want to work with, you know, and
that
he also
pays for $100,000 rap
parties, well, you know, yeah.
He's
very nice.
Kid,
so that's
puts him through college.
Like, it's a big, nice. Yeah. It goes a long way, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I do like the Tomster though as an actor, but you know.
Me too. Me as well. I'm saying to put that in perspective for someone because he's an easy target because he's a little bit out there, you know.
And that's another strange thing that we never really addressed on this show is that you know, people go after him for religion. What other actor would you go after for their religious beliefs? Because people will even say, "Well, Will Smith's Scientologist." I don't believe that's true either, but regardless,
Will Smith might be a Scientologist.
I know, but nobody says, I don't want to see a Ben Stiller movie because he's a Jew, you know what I'm saying? Or I don't want to see a Denzel movie because he's black. It's just really strange that we zero in on certain things, specifically with Cruise on his religion, and it's kind of an open target. You know, I'm not sticking up for anybody or putting anyone's religion down regardless. It has nothing to do with that. It's just you never hear that kind of stuff.
I mean,
religions
can sound crazy. You're right.
Well, you don't say, you know, no one has ever said, I don't want to see Alec Baldwin's movie because he's a Catholic. It's just strange to me that, like, it's part of the whole conversation.
Part of that Church of Science.
Well, there we go.
I didn't know that.
I mean,
that's
that would
pretty
be
pretty nuts.
People would say that more, but no one wants to see a Val Kilmer movie regardless. So it's just that.
I think that I don't know that his Mark Twain thing actually sounds fairly interesting, and he really did look like him and did a lot of work to get into to shape to play that. So I'm interested in seeing that.
Well, he did have throat cancer that he just had removed too, so I think his weight loss was in relation to that.
Nah,
chemo.
People said that he's disclaimed that, so I don't know.
Well, maybe he, like Michael Douglas, will come out and say he got it from eating. Or giving head. Sorry. That almost
giving
got
head?
Vulgar. Yeah.
Why has he got to be gay? Why can't it be pussy?
Well, first of all, why is giving head in reference to gay? You know? So why can't you be giving head to a chick? I mean, that's giving head.
Does that sound right to you?
Well, I mean, it didn't sound gay until you brought it into the gay situation there, my friend.
You tell someone, I gave head the other day. What do you think? No, you say, I went down on someone. What do you think?
I think they either had a very good day or a very bad day, my friend.
Hey, either way, they probably made some money.
Well, we got about 15 minutes into the show before we started talking about head, so I think we're good. We're good. Made some good headway there. Let's take this as an opportunity to take a break. We'll come back with the answer to our trivia and some reviews.
Oh, shit.
Proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
About to witness history in the making.
Hi there, this is Todd from Forgotten Films, and if you spend all your time watching new releases, then you need to broaden your movie horizons. And a great way to do that is by joining me for the Forgotten Filmcast. We don't talk about the new releases, we don't even talk about the classics. We talk about the movies that time forgot. On each episode, I'm joined by another film blogger to discuss a film that may or may not be worth rediscovering. So look for the Forgotten Filmcast on iTunes, Podomatic, and wherever you find great podcasts.
All right, Gay Perry. What's up?
Hey, I like that movie. All right.
Movie.
So the question was,
good movie.
Matthew McConaughey is best remembered for his early on-screen appearance.
I haven't seen this in
so
long. I don't
know
who else is in this movie.
What other Oscar-winning actor appears in the film? And I want to be clear that he's not won an Oscar for his acting, but yet for his writing and for making not directing, but he was, I believe, a producer on something that won Best Picture that he also directed. The answer is, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Ben Affleck.
Yes, of course, with the paddle.
Yes, see?
Right.
There you go, sir.
I do remember that.
Yeah, so he was in that too. So it's funny, though, that he's never re-linked, you know, pardon the pun, with a link letter, that he's never become...
Well, I've heard him... Universe. I don't know, because I seem to remember a conversation that I've heard him talking about that movie and his involvement in it. So I don't... Some people
was it not a positive experience or something?
No, fine. Yeah, I can't remember where it was. But so people do remember him. Obviously not me. Well, I do. I mean, the paddle thing. I remember it, yes, but I don't know.
I'm just saying it's, you know, it's as big a star as McConaughey, but people never associate Affleck with that movie. But always
that
associate
was
McConaughey.
That but that was his McConaughey's, you know, trademark, right?
But I mean, it's kind of his breakout role, a la Brad Pitt and Thelma and Louise and whatnot. But Affleck has at least more lines. Is in the movie a more substantial character, but everybody kind of forgets that Affleck's in that movie, including you and I, you know? So I just think it's interesting that people never bring up him. And like I said, Affleck has gone on to repeatedly have been in Terrence Malick films, have been in Kevin Smith
movies. Yeah, but has
Smith
he done movies. A car commercial?
That's true.
So there you go.
Well, yeah. Tell me you saw the Jim Carrey impersonation.
Yes, this is the best thing.
That's great.
I love when he talks about what's he going to do with the booger he's been rolling around.
It is good stuff. All right. So that's the trivia question for this week. If you got it, then kudos to you. If you have a trivia question you'd like us to read on air, send it to us on our Facebook page, or you can email us, Trevor@MovieMavericks.com, Jason@MovieMavericks.com. Moving on. Reviews. You were all stoked this week because you saw A Walk Amongst the Tombstones.
That's right, I was. I loved this movie.
It kicks ass, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of detective movies, and this is just great. It reminded me a lot of great detective movies, you know. But more, I don't know, I talked about The Equalizer earlier on, and this is a movie that reminded me a lot about that. It's well-paced. It lets you get to know the characters, and it sets the mood just perfectly.
I'll say one word for it. It's smart. It's got smart writing in there as well. I think that some of those scenes are very nicely played, especially in the beginning when he visits the guy who's hiring for a job, and he, you know, the guy's setting him up in a lot of ways and wants him to know what he wants him to know, and he uses his detective's, you know, kind of his detective skills and his people skills to figure out and say things to him and get things out of him.
It's a little more realistic than most stuff as well, because there's not really a huge arcing, you know, it feels like a guy kind of fumbling around trying to figure out what's going on, rather than a movie that's been staged and created for you as an audience, you know, and I like that about it.
It's also not Liam Neeson running around Taken, where he's kicking everyone's ass. He gets his ass beat a couple times in this movie. He's a flawed character.
Actually gives up, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of liked that about it. It was a nice change of pace, and I think that's why this didn't do as well.
That's why it's more realistic, as I would say. Like Gone Baby Gone, while Gone Baby Gone had the whole, you know, arcing storyline and all the little ins and outs.
This is a little bit more low key.
This doesn't have that, you know, but it does have that sense of a guy kind of wandering around, getting into shit, just trying to figure something out.
And this was you know, we talked about this a little bit when you saw this initially, that this is a loose remake, or not a remake, but a continuation of a character that was a Jeff Bridges done character back in the 80s.
Book.
Yeah, it's a series of books. And,
right.
Yeah, anyways, 8 Million Ways to Die, I saw a long time ago just because Oliver Stone wrote the script, although Stone has said, you know, Hal Ashby, the director, and Bridges basically ad-libbed a lot of it. It's not his script, so it's a total folly of a movie. But Walk Among the Tombstones is kind of an interesting double feature, and if you're that keen on that character and that whole world, it'd be interesting to see, just to compare the two, of what can be done with a nice hand, a professional hand.
The thing about these types of movies is that the character I want to see is Liam Neeson.
Right, yeah.
You know, and that's so much happens with these, you know, where a guy steps in and it's the character is the actor. You know, that's what I want to see. I haven't read these books. So I don't really know anything about the character. But I could watch Liam Neeson, you know, walk around as Matthew Scudder and do all this stuff. In the same way I could watch Denzel Washington be the Equalizer, you know?
But how nice is it that it was set in 99 as well?
I loved it. Yeah, that was just awesome.
It was a nice touch for whatever reason, because it's not, it's far enough back to where it's not too far back, but it's not too recent either. You know, it's pre 9/11. It's
well, they don't have the internet as well. You know, they right. do, and they get into that and stuff. But it felt like watching a movie in 1999 was the nice thing about it as well. It felt like a lost gem.
I knew the rules of that world.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I felt like, you know. So, yeah, I highly recommend that as well. And I think that kind of slipped past a lot of people's radar when it was out in theaters.
Issue with this is that the trailer is a poor representation for what this movie actually is.
Another reason it didn't perform all that well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is a slow-moving drama in some spots, much like The Equalizer is for a good portion of it before it turns
into an action
thriller.
Yeah, I liked him, but, you know, yeah. I
like Which one did you like
Stone.
Better?
I feel like Jesse Stone out there, anyone out there, those Tom Selleck movies. This is good like that, you know.
Did you like The Equalizer better than this?
I like them equally the same, I'll say.
Oh, you equalized it. All right, nice done.
I did.
Nicely done there, pal. All right, well, I caught Birdman, one of the best picture
Whoa, movies. Let him go.
And, I loved it. Which is not actually is surprising because I didn't think I was gonna like it.
I've heard people really didn't like this.
It's I had told you off air that I thought you would really like it because it voices some of the things that you have to say about superhero. It's really it starts off very condemning of superheroes and they're very bold in act. They talk about openly about actors that play other superheroes and Robert Downey Jr. and whatnot and. It's hard not to believe that this is how Keaton feels about some of these things, although he's sworn up and down that this is just a character he's playing. But he plays, obviously, you know, the Birdman guy, and he's kind of he's got this voice in his head that says, you started this all, and these guys are just posers. You should be more famous, and they should talk about you. And it's kind of this narcissistic guy who's putting on a Raymond Carver play. And it's all one continuous take, so obviously, you know, that can't be done because the film reels and the whole thing and cutting and all that. So there's probably 20 cuts in this movie, but it's a lot of beautifully done and staged and choreographed thing. It's basically done like a film play, even though they're on stage the whole time. Mm-hmm. And acting is phenomenal. I hate to say it. It really won me over. I mean, I didn't really want to go with this movie in a lot of ways because I felt it was being very theatrical. But fuck, Keaton does a great job.
What I've heard is too over the top.
It is, but Edward Norton is playing basically how you would imagine Edward Norton is on a set, mm-hmm. and it's almost like a peek behind the scenes in a lot of ways of certain things and the kind of the life, but there's a great monologue about what a critic is and what an artist is, and there's some, like I said, it's very smart in unexpected ways. It was my thing. Another word I'm going to use a lot this show is smart, and I just thought it was very smart in ways that I didn't expect.
Because this show is not smart, and I don't want to remind people of that.
I know. I don't want to raise the IQ content of this damn thing. So cock, shit, fuck, you know, all that stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, but I think that I highly recommend it to you because it does voice some of the things about what is going on with movies that you've been saying for quite a while. And when I saw it, I just kind of smiled to myself thinking, man, where have I heard that before? You know, so I think you would get a kick out of this. Even if you don't love it, I think it's worthy of a watch.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's got a lot of actors you care about.
Cast is awesome, yeah. So.
The writing is very, very good here. It's really good. And the acting, it's like a stage play because every actor gets their moment, and there's about 7 or 8 main characters, and they all have moments with each other, but not in a normal movie fashion. It's very theatrical, you know? The camera moves constantly, and man, it was a Herculean effort in a lot of ways to get everybody this choreographed, hitting their marks, and doing the dialogue and acting they're doing. So, well done. 4 stars for me, but a difficult, challenging movie, that's for sure. Great. So, talk to me about Fury. I still haven't seen this. Should I see Fury?
Fury, well, you like Ayer.
I do like
Ayer.
Good
old David Ayer here.
Put your hands in the Ayer. Ayer.
Yeah. This was another Ayer tragedy for me.
Really?
In that I loved the idea, but he just loses it, really. It's slow, boring at times, just nothing's happening.
It looked ponderous.
Well, it is, and the problem that I found with it is that these guys in this movie are just assholes, in every single one of them. The trailer gave you a sense that you were going to get to see some camaraderie and whatnot. And there's very little of that in this. This is a more in your face, what I gather, what American Sniper kind of is like, what it takes to fight, to be in war, you know, and to survive it. So they're all assholes. And that's the movie.
Now, was it over long? Was the length too much?
Yeah, it was boring as shit half the time. The ending scene's great where the big shootout at the end, but you know, the rest of it, I mean, when they do the war stuff, yeah, sure, that's fine. That's exciting, as it's always going to be, but anything else is just a colossal waste of time.
So you're giving it a negative vote because of the script and the acting's no good? Pitt's no good?
Oh, the acting's great. The script's dog shit. But everyone else in it is really, I mean, Brad Pitt's good in it. I mean, the guy that really comes out of this is this guy John Bernthal.
Oh, I love John Bernthal. John, yeah, Bernthal. Walking Dead and from Snitch and a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, who was great in Walking Dead, of course, is off that show, but is just fucking awesome in this movie.
He's got a great screen presence. I like that kid a lot.
He does. LaBeouf is less than great in this. I felt like you just see the crazy in him, and he's just trying so hard in this. He almost ruins the movie because he overacts.
That's what I was saying. That's what,
and Brad Pitt,
like,
a little bit as well. You know, it's like you can tell why Brad Pitt took this role, and he's essentially this. He's a dark guy. He's turned dark by this war, and this they lose their secondary driver guy or whatever in the beginning of the movie, and so this young kid comes on. This is towards the end of the war, and so they get this young kid who hasn't seen a lot of the war, and he kind of latches on to him in a way, you know, because this kid's so innocent, and he's so dark, and it's not very good. I don't know. John Bernthal is fucking awesome, though.
So you say that's a no-go, so I haven't missed anything by not watching that.
I'd say watch it, because you like David Ayer so damn much. You might see something in it.
Yeah, but this looks like nothing like the David Ayer stuff that I like. You know, this looks very...
It's not. You know, I liked the other stuff better than this. So, I don't know.
Now, what about Daniel Radcliffe's entry into the romantic comedy genre?
Oh, my goodness. The What If movie. Yeah, okay, I liked it.
I heard it was good.
I really liked it, and he's goddamn good. He just is. I don't know what happened with the Harry Potter shit. I don't know what to say about him, but those Harry Potter kids, they all turned out wonderful in their adult lives. They're great human beings, and they're also somehow great actors. I don't
know.
Yeah,
really.
I really don't know how
it happened. Warner Brothers put him under a fucking spell. I mean,
I don't know, but he needs to be in more stuff. He's great in this. Zoe Kazan plays the girl in this. She was in Ruby Sparks, which also, if you haven't seen, wonderful movie. She's good in this. Yeah, I just liked it. It's a straightforward romantic comedy. Becomes her best friend, and she's dating another guy, and it's just about him, you know, being her friend, but also wanting her, and, you know, where's that line of right and wrong, of when can he, you know, go get her, you know, when is he allowed to do that, you know? His parents cheated on each other, his girlfriend's left him, he's kind of jaded in a way, but he doesn't want to cross that line.
This doesn't
her.
Sound very original, so what makes it so good?
It's not, it's just good.
The level of energy brought to it, or what?
The writing, the acting is great. Yeah, there are just sequences in this where just nothing's happening, but these two people, just there's a spark between them, and the dialogue is just great, you know. And it's a bit on the dirty side, even for a PG-13 movie. I thought it was a bit dirty, but
dirty little boy. That offended your sensibilities there. The PG-13 line. This line has been crossed.
Well,
by
it was
the
a little
MPAA.
Surprising. I mean, there's just I don't know. You'd have to see it. It's very good. I thought it was really good for what
I've heard.
It's called What If. I mean, it's literally just a romantic comedy, right? I mean, there's nothing special about it other than just it exists. You know, that alone apparently does it.
All right, so you're giving that one a positive recommendation. All right, I'll talk about Boyhood here briefly. I saw this recently because I am catching up with all the Best Picture nominees, and so far so good, but I have to admit I was a little underwhelmed with what is apparently the front runner for the best picture going into the weekend, if you read certain news sources.
Yeah.
And this is a movie that's been widely acclaimed, if not universally heralded, as the greatest fucking thing ever happened. I mean, this has got 100% perfect score on Metacritic, Rotten Tomatoes, all this stuff. And while it was a Herculean effort, I gotta say I was just really kind of underwhelmed with this
movie.
Was
it a Herculean effort? Have everyone just been fooled by this?
It's no, because it's I'll say
I
this.
I feel like everyone's been fooled by the fact, oh, this took 12 years to make. It's like...
You just mentioned the Harry Potter kids. It's a lot of that kind of shit where he lucked out to have people that grew up to be interesting on camera and actors that I'll say this.
You know who grew up to be interesting on camera?
Who?
Haley Joel Osment or whatever his
name is. I think you say Mila Kunis.
Oh.
Haley Joel Osment grew up to be a walrus. She was, I don't really know what the
was
fuck
she
going
a
on
child
here
actor?
Yeah, you never saw Santa with Muscles? Come on. I'm serious.
All right.
So
moving on.
Getting back to Boyhood.
I don't watch gay movies with Santa with muscles. I don't know
that's
what you're
a Hulk Hogan
about
Christmas movie. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that sounds totally gay.
It's freaking awesome. It played in theaters.
Yeah, did you find that out on Muscle Growth?
Oh, no. I saw the trailer on Suburban Commando.
Yes. Hey, Suburban Commando is awesome. All right, let's go on.
Boyhood.
Boyhood. Or Manhood.
Yeah, Boyhood. Basically, if you watch it, you'll end up at fucking Manhood. It takes forever. It's a three-hour movie that feels like it takes a lifetime to watch. I mean, this thing is about as slow-moving as you can go. And it was nice because Ethan Hawke is fantastic in it. I mean, he really does deserve that nomination. He comes off great. Ethan Hawke's like the poor man's Tom Cruise in a lot of ways. Like, this guy is really committed to his craft and makes it look effortlessly. And it's good in all sorts of weird genres. I mean, this guy is like almost like Kevin Bacon in the sense that he's co-starred with so many people and he's been in so much shit. I mean,
but he can't catch a real break.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But he's never really been in a blockbuster. It's kind of amazing. But this movie for him is a triumph. And it's in a lot of ways, it's well done. It kept me engaged. But man, it goes on. And the weird thing is, since I've watched it in the days since, it's stuck with me a little bit. So I don't know if it's growing in my memory into something that's kind of substantial and I needed some time away from it, but I'm catching little things and thinking about it and remembering certain things and making connections again with this and that. So
embrace it.
Yeah. Right. So, really it's a 3-star review for me and I think it's a little overrated, but then again, I keep thinking and making connections.
3 stars is growing.
Yeah. It's growing into 3.5, possibly 4 eventually.
If you rub it hard enough.
Exactly. No dry rubbing here. Yeah, but I do recommend it, although I recommend Birdman over Boyhood so far. So I'm a little befuddled at why people are so taken aback by this and why.
You got the alliteration down. Birdman, Boyhood, and you're befuddled.
Yeah, exactly. Ain't that some bullshit? All right, well, the last movie we'll talk about on the review portion is Girl Most Likely. And what is she most likely to do, succeed or fail?
I guess fail.
Fail hard?
I'm not sure. After watching The Skeleton Twins, I decided to watch this. This is another Kristen Wiig movie. Streaming right now if you want to watch. It's called Girls Most Likely. It's from a couple years ago. I liked it, quite honestly. I thought it was pretty good. Matt Dillon's really great in it.
Matt Dillon's always good.
Yeah, I know. It's not fair, but... but I thought it was a really smart movie. You don't expect it because it's a little odd, but it's, the way they work the oddity into it, it's comes out as being a little more normal, except for the end, which goes a little bit further out, but everything comes together in the end in a nice way.
It's written well, it sounds like.
It is written very well, and it has, everyone's kind of off in it, you know, everyone's kind of a character.
Isn't that how all indie movies go, though, honestly?
It really is. And this does play very much like an indie movie. It reminded me a lot of the last Zach Braff movie.
Wish You Were Here.
Wish You Were Here, is that what it was? Yeah. But Kristen Wiig's always good. You know, if you like Kristen Wiig, and I watched The Skeleton Twins, I watched this. They actually make a great double feature.
I think she's a very talented person, obviously comedian-wise, and then just dramatic, too. And
And acting wise, yeah, she's great in it. Annette Bening's in this. I don't know, a bunch of other people. People I don't really know, I've never seen before. But they were all good, so I can't say anything bad about it. I liked it quite a bit. If you like the down and out, she plays a playwright who never amounted to anything, but was considered the next big thing, but then never actually did anything about it. And she's having to return home to her just insane family. Her mother's crazy. Her mother's boyfriend, played by Matt Dillon, is nuts. And her brother is actually a bit of a retard.
A retard?
A retard. But very good. But still
thank you,
very
Alan.
Good. In a sense, Matt Dillon plays this character who says, Kristen Wiig's character always thinks that he's lying, and he introduces himself as George Bush, and he's a spy. So I'm a spy. My name is George Bush. It's Matt Dillon, but it's very funny, and the way that that everything ends up happening is also very, very good, very funny. Watch it.
All right.
We'll streaming give it streaming on Netflix. Watch it. You'll enjoy it.
We're giving positive reviews to, looks like 5 out of 6 movies here. So we both liked everything out here except for Fury. So stay away from Fury.
Yeah, Fury
furiously. And I highly recommend Birdman, and you're highly recommending A Walk Among the Tombstones. So check out those. Let's move on to the Trailer Addict portion.
Oh my God.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay.
So your boy Guillermo del Toro, he used to be real...
My boy.
High on. Yeah, lately you haven't been, though. He's very prolific and back with a Victorian-era haunted house
what
film.
What is this about?
I couldn't tell you. That's
seriously,
the problem with this trailer.
That's the problem with Guillermo del Toro movies. When you have someone who's so creative, and then you give them all the money in the world and all the freedom, you wind up with something like this, which is just, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, this trailer is way too overly complicated. It looks beautiful. It's set design.
I don't care.
Creepy,
no.
But it looks also...
I'll buy a damn coffee book of Tim Burton movies if I'm interested in that.
Yeah, this looks, outside of a production design triumph, a very confused trailer. I couldn't tell you what was going on in this, to who and why Jeff Bridges looked so bald and
was Jeff
scared.
Bridges in this?
Yeah, you didn't see him in there?
I don't know what I saw. I think I saw the Alice in Wonderland girl. I don't know.
And Loki's running around doing some shit. And Jeff
Bridges.
Oh,
you're right.
Like,
he was in there.
Yeah, there's some people running around.
I don't
in this
know. It was so weird. It's just it felt like 3 movies edited into 1 trailer. I was confused.
Not only that, you get the final tag, October 2015. I thought, aren't we jumping ahead a little bit here, guys? Can we not just enjoy 2015 since we're already talking about Halloween of 2015? My goodness.
I don't know. Very weird.
10-month jump here.
Hopefully they will fix the trailer so that I can understand it.
Yeah, maybe it's going to be all in Spanish. Who knows? Moving on, another production like Outcast, which we talked about recently, the Nicolas Cage, Hayden Christensen movie, which... you know, we talk about a lot of American films that are spiced up or added certain elements for the foreign market, and that movie looked like a foreign film that was spiced up to appeal to the American audience. This looks kind of like the same thing, doesn't it? This
sure, it's a bunch of like Asian people are. It's weird, right?
This movie looks off for some reason, and I love the fact that this stars Clive Owen as some sort of knight, and Morgan Freeman as a rebellion leader. It looks like. And he gets
head of the knights.
Yeah, head of the knights rebellion, and their rebellion against some sort of evil king of some sort.
King. I don't understand the point of this movie. Why is how did this get made?
This is obviously a how
it
did
just
this get
looks
made
like,
situation.
Yeah, like okay. We have a bad king and a couple of knights, and they're gonna save the kingdom.
I love when the scroll comes up and it says Clive Owen, Oscar nominee
for
Closer.
Closer.
And I'm thinking, you're going to throw the Oscar tag on here?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Couldn't it be star of Shoot 'Em Up? Morgan Freeman, star of Chain Reaction? I mean, do we
Morgan
have to throw
Freeman.
the $1 million baby tag on there? I mean, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, man. Oscars.
These guys have been in more bombs than Oscar gates.
Man. Fuck. This doesn't look very good. I just got to be honest.
Yeah, the last time I reviewed it, you dismissed it. Let's move on. My Life, directed by Nicholas Winding Refn, is a documentary that was shot by his wife, a la Hearts of Darkness, the famous documentary about Francis Ford Coppola making Apocalypse Now. This doesn't look nearly as intriguing, but does reaffirm my belief that Only God Forgives is a terrible fucking movie that he had nothing to say in making. Obviously, he doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, just seeing this trailer, I go, thank you. I mean, I want to see this because I want to know exactly how that movie got so botched because it has no point, and he's basically admitting that as it's.
Yeah, I think this looks great. I mean, as far as wanting to, like, a truly unabashed or just, well, I guess totally bashed, right?
Yeah.
A look at the behind the scenes of something, of an off-the-rails movie. I love that, you know, Alejandro Jodorowsky is in this.
Yeah.
You know, Ryan Gosling is in this, obviously his wife and he are in this. But it just, you don't get to see this very often.
Yeah, this looks fascinating in that sense, you know. But it doesn't look like it's going to be on the level of Hearts of Darkness because that's such a seminal movie.
Yeah, exactly. But because it's that movie
turned out to be such a classic in a lot.
But that's
in like
okay, right?
But this is such a fuck up. I want to see how this happened, you know, especially after Drive because it was such a letdown. And there are scenes. I mean, I think that people will see this and it will force them to watch Only God Forgives. Afterwards, just to see what the reference point is, you know, because
that's, I haven't seen it.
But I think now you should wait until after this documentary, so you might watch it with a different eye. Honestly, you might even have an appreciation for it in a lot of sense, because it's really one of the most befuddling, one of the worst movies I've ever seen in a lot of ways. So frustrating.
Well, I think this is great. I love these kind of things. This is only an hour long. It really should just these should just be, you know, the special features on every movie.
I agree.
Be this, you know, I don't want to see everyone blowing each other. I want to see, this is what I want to see.
But you got to give him credit too for allowing this to be out in the world, I think.
Yeah, no, I feel that's what I felt as well when I watched it. I thought, wow, that's actually pretty bold. He seems very open.
Cranky.
During it times. Seems like, yeah, like he, like, and you, he's well aware he's being recorded. So I don't know, bold. I like it.
Yeah. It doesn't look like a puff piece at all, as I'll say that. All right, moving on. There is a documentary coming out that I think looks pretty interesting. Will be premiering in theaters, video on demand, and it's a Starz production, so you can see it on the cable channel shortly thereafter. Mm-hmm. Titled Champs, chronicling specifically Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, and Bernard Hopkins. But what started off this trailer to me looked like a puff piece. Got fairly interesting when they started talking about these men that are, you know, beasts and fight for everything, but yet become swindled so easily by money men, promoters, and, you know, the need for a union in the sport. And the documentary, if it's really about that, is going to be a lot more intriguing than I initially thought it was going to be with the title. And they got some, you know, big stars. It looks like Mark Wahlberg and a couple other name actors talking about the sport, what it means, but really about the financials of these guys and how they all end up broken in a lot of ways and broken men. What'd you think about this trailer? I know you're not a huge boxing fanatic. So
yeah, I'd reiterate what you just said. I mean, the first, you know, 10 seconds of this, you think, oh, geez, like I've seen this, you know, I don't, do we really need another one of these? And they hit you with that completely different approach to it. And I believe there was even a quote in it that said this was a different perspective than normally you see. And it is, it looks totally in depth as far as the other side of boxing goes, and just looks super interesting.
Yeah, I think this is gonna maybe shed some light on too on how these guys, you know, people make jokes about how Holyfield and Tyson can make all these millions and millions of dollars and be broke, you know, and how that really happens with promoters and fees and sanctioning bodies and all sorts of ways that they take advantage of these guys. And Bernard Hopkins, God bless him, is living off the interest, not the principal. So you got to give him credit on that. He's been very smart.
The funny thing about this is that everyone knew this while it was happening. Yeah. Everyone talked about this while it was happening. So and now there's a documentary on it, but which no one's really made. I mean, I'm actually sure there are some out there about some of these promoters and stuff because these guys were well known. Everyone knew they were doing this.
Well, now Don King, if you follow the sport, is really out of the game. He's in his late 80s now, if not mid 80s.
Yeah, sure. And, I mean, that's fine.
But not only that, he has no fighters worth a shit because he's known for doing these hardball tactics. His book on his life is one of the most fascinating reads I've ever read. And they made a TV movie starring Ving Rhames, an HBO movie years ago that chronicles some of it. But these guys that are attracted to boxing, it's just a strange mix of characters, of fighter and people that can manipulate these athletes that are capable of doing great damage, and they can, you know, beat them mentally in a lot of ways. It's very interesting. I hope this documentary fulfills that promise that it shows in this, because I think it looks fascinating. Now, what do we got next? We got our boy Jean-Claude Van Damme back.
Do we? I don't want him back.
Is Van Damme back?
I'm just doing these. He can take his kidney and go.
This is an absurd fucking trailer. Let's be honest, man.
This is a stupid fucking movie. Are you kidding me?
This is like the urban legend about the girl who meets a guy in a club and then wakes up the next day and she's missing a kidney. But yet it's Van Damme. He meets a chick. He fucks her. She drugs him. He wakes up. His kidney's gone.
He is in. He goes to fucking. Where's he? It's like wherever it is.
Europe?
It's
Thailand? Fucking, somewhere.
I think some Asian place.
Eastern Europe.
He goes there to give his kidney to his niece, his dying niece. And he gets hit up the night before. And his kidney gets robbed, and he's also, by the way, a hitman. Okay, and then they have to go get the kidney back to save his. It's fucking what? Are you kidding me?
Well, what I like
this fucking thing
is that the night before he's gonna donate his kidney, he's in a club getting all fucked up, damaging kidney with some gal. You know what I mean? Just doing real damage.
That's the most realistic part of the whole movie. Van Damme's in a club the night before and something important's happening. Yeah, okay.
Gonna fuck a 20-year-old European chick. Yeah, I believe that. Yeah. And what else I like about this movie, or this trailer, I should say, is that the day after he's had the surgery, he's already in ass-kicking mode. There's no time for recovering and getting the body back.
I know,
back.
He's being thrown onto his back. He's doing all that shit. It's like, oh, okay.
He's a quick healer. This trailer.
It looks horrendous, man.
It does look bad, man. I gotta be honest.
It's just not.
And I held out I held out for a long time on the Van Damme train. You know, I watched a lot of these straight to DVDs, and they've been a varying quality.
Some of them were pretty good, though, man.
Some of them were for a long time.
In Hell, come on.
I thought Wake of Death was another good one. There's a couple that are. I liked that one. I thought it had a nice kind of art house quality to it.
Regardless, that's damn near 10 years ago. We're talking about a decade ago.
They start getting, although the JCVD, the French film he did, which really wasn't released.
That is very good, yes. But again, that's almost a decade ago.
Yeah, 2008, so we're getting up there. Yeah. So, you know, it's these now have descended into, you got to mix it up a little bit here. And this is just.
Although, you know, I did like the last one that he did, the comedy that's actually streaming
on
Netflix
Welcome to the Jungle.
Right now.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Jungle, which you can watch.
So that's your online streaming Netflix pick of the week.
Oh, sure. He's not really in it so much. So
Hold on.
But it's still pretty good. I still liked it.
We got a new little thing here, a little streaming online pick of the week. And Trevor's online pick of the week is?
Welcome to the Jungle.
You've got fun and games, okay?
Oh, God, I don't.
My online pick of the week is Runaway Train, which I have been imploring anybody to watch at any point just because it's such a kick-ass movie, and they got a beautiful, it's like an HD upgrade, obviously, from the VHS copy I got on Netflix. So worth a watch, especially if anyone's a big fan of Snowpiercer out there or Unstoppable or any really an action movie in general.
Well, it's nothing like Snowpiercer, so.
No, but it is a movie on a train.
It takes place on a train.
Set in the cold. It's a single setting and whatnot. It's on a train. Uh-huh. So,
all right.
You know, check it out.
Check it out.
All right, well, that's going to wrap up our show. I think we did it tonight in under an hour and a half, which is almost fucking amazing for the movie Mavericks.
Just end it.
Just pull it out. Just
I think that's what Van Damme's saying with Pound of Flesh. Just end it.
You
just
took my kidney. I'm going to go get it back.
Just end it. End my career.
We want to thank you all for joining us tonight on episode 266. As always, you can catch us on iTunes. Our past episodes are on moviemavericks.com, Stitcher, and anywhere else you may be getting your podcast from. Also, go to Box Office Ace, get in the prediction game, and we have an Interstellar DVD Blu-ray giveaway. You can go do that on the Movie Mavericks main homepage. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, warp 9. Engage!